Are you ready? Okay. I will call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting on this March 27th, 2012. Please join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Thank you. For the benefit of the audience and so forth, before we go down the agenda, Supervisor Sanders has a very important meeting, so he will need to leave at 11 o'clock regardless to kind of where we are dealing with some issues with DCAT and things of that nature. So Paul and I will kind of continue to finish up. So we have excused him, realizing that he can't be in both places, and this is an important meeting that he needs to attend as
well.
Did
you need Callie to send a note or something?
Please do. That would be a good idea to follow up with that. Great. Okay, moving on. Consideration of minutes of 3-20-12.
Move approval. Second.
It's been moved and second. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. Okay.
Mr. Chair, before we get too far in the agenda, I would ask that we point out, as we make the transition to this new agenda, there's a couple items at the end of the agenda that did not print.
Yep.
And so I would suggest that we go ahead and add those at this point. While I know there's not a spot on our agenda to do that, just as we make the transition. And so I believe that we've got item number 15 that should be on there, and that's public comment number 2. I believe that we've got item 16, which should be announcements from the supervisors, and then item number 17, which should be listed as adjournment.
Yes. When we do it certainly didn't matter, but I think it would be appropriate to, for the benefit of the audience, to duly note that. I was going to bring it up at a later time, but this is one of those little glitches that we're trying to work through as we have transitioned over to a new format. Civic Plus, as far as our board meetings and agenda and other information. So, great. Thank you for that. Okay, moving on down. Next item is public comment number 1. This is where members of the audience may address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. We do note that as maybe one or two individuals will want to talk about the 5-year program, and I have reserved an opportunity for them to respond after we've heard from Engineer Daring Moon. So they won't need to comment at this time. That's okay. Is there anyone else that would like to comment regarding a topic on today's agenda? Okay. Moving on. No public hearing items. So the first item of consideration is the presentation and discussion of the 5-year construction program, County Engineer Darren Moon.
Hi, Darren.
Morning.
Morning.
How are you doing?
Good.
Darren, when you start, kind of give a very short overview of the process and how we historically have handled the 5-year review and so forth. I know this group did have an opportunity last year, but for the benefit of the audience, it may not have had an opportunity.
My first few slides kind of describe the process, but just kind of give you a little history on how we've done it. In the past, we've held some meetings at our office as kind of a public meeting for the 5-year program. And over time, the attendance dwindled to the point we had nobody show up for a couple years in a row, so we decided just to move that meeting to a board meeting like this. So that's how we come to this point. But the 5-year program itself, what I'm proposing today is just the draft. We have not had any discussion about this yet, so this is just my proposal. I put it back on the agenda in 2 weeks for official approval, but between now and then, it's open for discussion and addition, so this is just a draft, so keep that in mind. Iowa code requires we do this 5-year program. Code section 309.22 every year is due by April 15th. And we do it because it's required, and we also do it because it's a good planning tool for us. Some of the general rules we follow when we put this together. The programming of projects should be based on the amount of money available to spend. This shouldn't be a wish list. It should be what we can actually afford to do. Ideally, projects enter the program in the fifth year and work their way up to the accomplishment year, which is the current year. More and more, that's more and more difficult because we seem to be more reactive now. We let things go a little bit further, especially bridges, and when something happens to it, we need to get it in there quick. So it's harder and harder to do. But new paving projects must meet paving points or a hearing must be held. We haven't had a new paving project in 12 years, so that's not something that comes up very often. And the road system that the project is on may determine what type of funds can be used. We have local roads, farm to market roads, and federal aid roads. A bunch of factors here for selecting projects: current condition of the pavement or structure and the age, bridge inspection results done every other year, system, average daily traffic, safety concerns, cost, development in the area, can it be repaired without replacement, and most importantly, are funds available to do the projects. These are the projects that involve local money only, and the board already approved these as part of the budgeting process earlier in the year. So this has already been approved. This mainly included we had four smaller culvert and bridge type projects, 1 through 4, and then 5 is a larger bridge that's split. It's on the Hardin County line, so that cost will be split between us and Hardin County. So we had a total of $535,000 the board approved for local construction dollars. Those are all reflected in the program. This is the form the DOT requires that we submit. I'm not going to go through this form. I pass it out to you. It's a little bit harder to follow, so I put it in a different format for the board. I'll show you later. Kind of split this up into two sections. Pavement we'll cover first, and then we'll get into bridges after that. First thing I did is I kind of looked at payments that we haven't done anything to since I've been with the county. It's been about 14 years now. So broke it into two. Billy, is there a way to hit that light? It's a little kind of reflecting off there. It's a little hard to see. There we go. Thank you. On the left is the PC payments. That's the concrete. And over on the right is the asphalt. I split them up because they both have different design lives to them. You can see we have a couple older payments, a 50-year-old and about a 40-year-old PC payment. Both of those are already in the program, but they're only one-mile stretches. Next oldest PC is 1980. That's R38, but it's 10 miles long, so when that comes due, that's going to be a pretty good chunk of money to redo that payment. And you can see the ages move up quickly after that and some of the lengths of the projects. Asphalt payments, we have a couple really old ones up by Story City. There's a couple miles coming out each direction of Story City, little segments, so they all add up to about 2.5 miles. The oldest one's 1971, so that one's getting fairly old. And North Dakota was done in 80, E57 Kelly. That's also already in the program. I stuck that in. Just to give you an idea of some of the ages we have out there. We are doing pretty good on payments. I will say that. We bonded for $7.4 million. That kind of bumped us up. A lot of counties are really struggling with payments and bridges. We're fortunate. We're struggling more on the bridge side, and we're doing pretty good on payments. But they do kind of run cyclical, so when they seems like when they come due, they're all coming due at the same time, and that's why we ended up bonding, because we're almost at a point with S-27 through McCallsburg, 9 miles section. We almost had to close that road because we just didn't have the money to do it. And that's kind of how the bonding got started. Put together just kind of overview of payments, what they cost us. Again, I broke it into PC payments and HMA. We have 36 miles of PC payments, 40-year design life. So we need to be doing 0.9 miles per year PC on average. HMA, we have 166 miles of that, 25-year. It's not supposed to last that long, but we're getting that life out of them because we let them go a little bit too long. 6.64 miles per year we need to be doing. So putting cost to both of those, we come up with about $2.29 million we need to be spending each year on pavements just to keep what we got out there right now. What do we have available? Really have two sources. FM funds, that comes out of the road use tax, the state road use tax. We spend around 25% on bridges right now, so take that out of the 967, we come to 725, but I'm also proposing we start using a little bit more of that on bridges, so that's probably even going to be less in the future. STP funds, that's the federal aid money for roads, $533 a year, and that future is very uncertain right now with Congress. They keep doing small extensions, but they can't come up with a long-term bill. So we do not know, but all indications are that will decrease in the future. So here's what we need, $2.29 million a year, and this is what we have, $1.2 million. There is a little bit of local money we spend on payments, but it's very very little.
Darren, could I interrupt just a moment?
Sure.
If you go back to that, the federal funds that we look at that are uncertain, how do you or other county engineers effectively plan with so much uncertainty when you certainly identify there is a specific need? If you could just maybe walk me through, you know, I mean, this is something that engineers across the country are faced with when we're talking about federal funds, but as a collective, what are the issues and how do you go about trying to prioritize what needs to be done immediately and what might have to be delayed based on until available funds are coming? And what type of timetable do you actually have to receive those dollars? When do we normally know and expect to receive dollars to complete projects?
Okay. Well, with these STP dollars in particular, that flows through CERT, our group in Des Moines, and that pretty much, we have like a, we kind of go by bills, and they're usually 4 or 5 year bills. So we have that time frame. We can't spend more than the current bill, so we can borrow ahead a little bit or bank some up in that account. So there's some flexibility there on when we spend it, but it's becoming more and more difficult to put the 5 year program together because we continually tell, you know, lawmakers we don't. It's unsustainable the way it is now, so it's difficult. But a lot of counties are actually closing a lot of bridges. Pavements are getting turned back to gravel. They have no other choice. We haven't quite reached that level. We're getting close on bridges, but that's the future we have.
Okay, thank
difficult.
You. Thank you.
This is the listing I put together for you rather than the DOT's form. It kind of goes through each project. Over on the far left, if there's a number in that column, that means it's in the draft program under that year. If there's nothing there, that means that's more of a wish list project, and it's on the list for consideration. So starting out, we have a couple projects left in 2012 to finish up. We have Richland Street in Fernald. And McFarland Park stuff, we're trying to get our bonding money, last of our bonding money used to do that before the end of July, but I'm having some difficulty getting the wording from the attorney we're using on to set up that hearing to get that done. So that may or may not happen yet this year. 2013, we have 590th paving. That's the Vetter project that we used some TIF money for. 2013 is also E57 Shipley. That's using farm to market funds. This just shows you what route it's on, not necessarily what fund we're using, but it's on a farm to market route, so we can use farm to market funds. That actually gets let next week through the DOT, so that'll get done this summer. 2013, North Dakota Avenue, we're still designing that project. 2013, E18. This is on the federal aid system, so we are going to use STP dollars to do that stretch from S-27 over to 65. And the last 2013 is Country Club Bike Lanes. We had to put that in our five-year program because we got that TE grant enhancement funds. And if the private funds, if they're able to come up with $220,000, that project's going to happen. So
at $100,000 more than we had been estimating that that project was going to be, because the number I kept hearing was $350,000 to do those bike lanes.
That was like $446,000, I think.
Or something initially.
Wasn't there a difference between the 5-foot bike lane and the 6-foot? I think this is figured a 6-foot wide.
Yeah, they wanted the 6-foot in the end, so that's what we ended up with, yeah. Next project is not included because that's E18. It's a half a mile stretch over the interstate. It's in bad shape. We had plans to put it in the program, but it is public now. Ragbri's coming through this summer through that route, so we need to get something done more quickly. So what we're doing is we're going to do this slurry over it. It's kind of a maintenance type thing. That should buy us 5 to 10 years, and I kind of wanted to try that anyway, so that would be a good approach up there for the short-term fix. 190th Street, G.W. Carver subdivision. This is a seal coat road out by Prairie Moon Winery area. It's never been actually paved. It's just been seal coated. We need to get that overlaid. So that's in 2014, using local dollars. State Street south of Ames, have not put that in the program, but we're discussing that with Ames. That project definitely needs to be done. Ames is using their MPO money to do that, but they're probably going to request county participate in those costs. Something to think about when we're going to negotiate that final cost with the city. That would be a good application for some TIF money, because we can only use local dollars on that road. It's locally funded only, so be a good spot if you're looking for good projects for that. S-27 extension, that's in the program in 2015. That's just a 1 mile stretch. Now we're getting more into the wish list items. The only other one in the program is E57. That's a 1 mile stretch into Boone County. It's getting fairly old, so we need to get that done. But starting with number 12 here, that's getting more into our wish list. 170th Street, this is a road. It's kind of the straight east of Gilbert. Goes out to the horticulture farm. Traffic count is very high. 710 vehicles a day for a gravel road is very hard to maintain. So that's one of the higher projects on our paving list, but like I said, we just don't have the money to add it to the program at this point. Another high traffic count road is University Drive, 530th south of Ames. The last traffic count had over 1,200 vehicles a day. I think some of that had to do with the fact we were doing R38 construction at the time, so it pushed some traffic over there, but we do know it does get a lot of traffic. We get new traffic counts this summer. They get done every 4 years. So if you have some new numbers on that, it should go down some, but it's still going to be really high for a gravel road. Number 15 is 600th Avenue. That's the 1 mile stretch between Lincoln Highway and Highway 30, where the co-op is. Number 16 is 220th Street. That's 13th Street extension coming out of Ames, the gravel portion that also heads out to the ethanol plant co-op area. Moving on to the next page, I think it's on the back of yours. Number 17, 560th Avenue. That's the City of Huxley was at a board meeting a year or two ago requesting we work with them on grade and pave stretch southeast corner of Huxley. South S Avenue, there's a 1 mile stretch to south of Nevada. It's kind of a cut across between Country Club and S-14. 220 vehicles a day. It's getting up there. It's still manageable, though, but we would like to pave that someday. Grant Avenue, I'll come back with that one and discuss that one last. We have a little more information on that one. Number 20, R-70 extension, that's a 1 mile stretch. That is at the very end of our program, so that actually should say 2017. 550th, just a short stretch north of Huxley. Neighborhood's been requesting that upgrade for many years. And 180th Street between, this is where our new Peterson Pit Bridge is, that stretch may get more traffic with the new bridge, but it already gets 240 vehicles a day, has a fairly high accident count. I put the accidents in there. That last column has 15 accidents. in that 1.9-mile stretch. Heading back to number 19, the Grant Avenue, I wanted to point out a few things with that. First of all, Wayne, that yellow envelope there is the list of signatures we received, over 200 signatures from Gilbert School Board, City of Gilbert, and the Fire and Emergency Response Agency. Submitted a petition requesting we pave this road and add the bike lanes to it. I did pass out a little summary sheet with some of my thoughts on Grant Avenue. It says Grant Avenue paving considerations at the top. Bring a photo of up here of the stretch we're talking about. Here's the current city limits of Ames. They have annexed. This was the Rose Prairie area, which has been delayed. So the paving of this 1 mile stretch here is been stalled pretty much by the city of Ames. So we don't know what's going to happen with that.
And that is city of Ames, county, city of Ames again, right? I mean that whole stretch goes back and forth.
It's half and half here, all city, half and half, all county, and all city. So it's all over the place. But starting with my notes up there, current ADT on north of Moose Road, we call it 190th. This stretch here is 210 vehicles a day. In general, we look at about 400 vehicles a day, kind of gets to that paving point. But like I showed you previously, we have more roads out there with more than 400 that we can't get paved either. So the general is 400, so we're a little under that now, but the new school could definitely increase that. The road is classified as local only. It means we can only spend local dollars on that. And there's a paved road 1 mile each way from that and north-south. Estimated cost to pave this is $1.4 million. But then when you add in the right-of-way costs, it's going to be some expensive land. And the bike trail, we're up to $1.75 million for the total project cost. There could be some right-of-way acquisition issues in there with some landowners. There was with the bike lane, anyway. Road geometrics are very safe through here, which, due to it being a very flat grade, wide open, shallow ditches, if there's any deep ditches, there's no large drainage structures near it, area to be unsafe. But you see my next statement is the accidents. Statistics north of 190th here show there's been 16 accidents in the past 10 years, only showing 3 in the last 4, so it's kind of went down a little bit. But 3 of those intersections were intersection related, or 3 of those accidents were intersection related, and all the rest were high speed, reckless driving, and just failure to maintain control of the vehicle. That's how they were put on the traffic report. The next page, I kind of gave you the age distribution of the accidents. Shows you the time, the age, and everything. This one's a little different than most because you'll see 65% of the accidents were under the age of 19 drivers. So we're talking about young driver accidents here is what the issue is. Story County recently added stop signs at the intersection of 180th right here. So we put stops, so it stops 180th. So this is through traffic and this stops. We'll hope to do something for at least those 3 accidents that were the intersection-related accidents that probably had something to do with the uncontrolled intersection there. We're also working with Intrans. They've addressed 2 stretches in Story County. They've been doing this for all the counties in the state, but they've addressed 2 segments. This is one with high accident counts, and the other is south of Story City. But we're continuing to work with them. We're going to get together at the sheriff's office and do some brainstorming and see what safety improvements we can do. But this stretch in particular, it's so flat, and there's nothing out there. I don't anticipate a lot of safety improvements that we could do other than paving the road. And there's also been discussions if that's even going to be a real safety improvement, because that's just going to be a speedway, flat, wide open.
Well, I would contend that right now that 190th, that stretch from George Washington Carver over to 69, is as fast a road as we've got in story. I mean,
if you notice the paint markings on the pavement, those are for drag strip. People time themselves out there. So that is a concern, too. We did come up with a new gravel road driving video to help young drivers that we're going to supply to driver's ed training classes, try to help that. A lot of kids, especially when they're traveling from city to city, they've never been on a gravel road before, and they don't know what it's like. I've already discussed the last point there. Ames does plan to, they did plan to pave this, but those plans have been stalled, and they say it's probably at least 2 years out before they consider
it. So exactly what area was Ames talking about paving this on whole, right in that?
This whole mile.
That whole mile there. Yeah. So
they're working with a developer to pay to pave it, and that fell through, so now.
But the biggest area that we're, the request has is for the area north of there, pretty much, which is the flatland that you were basically alluding to, and part of that is because of the pending increased traffic with the new school going in that particular area.
The school is
right in there. Okay.
And Wayne, that entire neighborhood, that's the Bloomington Heights neighborhood that feeds into what is Grant coming out of Ames, but they're all zoned Gilbert School System. Right. So
exactly.
I mean, that's a natural path for them to take north to Gilbert. I have some of the same concerns that Darren has in terms of it being a speedway and finding the dollars. But before we get into the full Grant conversation, I would love it, if it's appropriate now, to kind of back up and just talk through a little bit of the rest of Darren's report, because the biggest thing I see that concerns me is Darren shows pretty clearly here that in order to maintain the roads that we have now, if you accept the 40 years and the 25 years that Darren puts on them, in order to maintain them, we need $2.2 million, just over $2.2 million, and we only have $1.2 million to do it right now. So I would love it if we could have, and I know we're not going to solve any problems today or make decisions today, but I'd like to talk a little bit about how we start to address that, because I would believe that as a county, we need to have some kind of plan for maintaining what we have, in addition to talking about doing additional paving.
Well, I think we do that, and I think your question is certainly very appropriate. One of the big issues that historically we've always faced is the plan lays out the projected projects that, if dollars were available, that we might expect to have. Oftentimes, those we may be able to do a portion of those. Some are extended beyond the 5 year and carried over into the next one, depending upon funding. And then occasionally something unforeseen shows up that requires a priority shift. But that happens rarely. You know, that's more rare from what we've done. But that's where the engineer comes back to us and talks about adjustments that maybe have to be made. And then what avenues, if any, that we have for additional funding, and that in creates part of the challenge. But hopefully Darren could walk through a little bit of your concerns, I think, here, and how we've had to look at that in previous years, knowing full well right now that's what's listed here. We don't have the funds to accomplish those, but they have to be initially in the plan, according to deals, T specs, and so forth, and then how we go about making adjustment is an ongoing dialogue. So, Darren, I haven't touched the bridges side of things,
so I have a lot more to go here with the bridges side, and that's the side where it's more critical on the short term. Pavements, I mentioned, we're doing okay, but you can see it's going to catch up to us over time again, but that could be 10, 15 years.
Well, I think Wayne's 100% right. I mean, you got to have the plan in, and I'm not even addressing specific roads. What I'm addressing, Wayne, is the dollars, the slinky effect that I see. I mean, the previous board, I think, was put in a situation where a funding mechanism that you guys utilize completely appropriately and, in my mind, completely necessarily, was to bond $7.5 million in order to catch up. And so what I'm talking about right now is we're at a point right now where, as Darren says, we're in pretty good shape. But you look at this thing 10 years, 12 years, 20 years down the road, if we're only spending $1.2 million, and in order to keep up, we need to be spending $2.2 million, it's going to catch up with us or some future board again, where they're going to have to look at some kind of alternative funding mechanism. And so what I'm suggesting is I believe that it's reasonable and prudent of us as a board to start to have some of these hard conversations of, okay, if we accept the numbers, if we accept the years that roads take and ultimately accept that we're $1 million short, where's that $1 million come from? Because eventually it's going to have to come, whether it all comes in one lump sum down the road or we find a way to chip away at it in the meantime. I just think that's a big number that we better be considering all the way through. And so, Darren, as you talk about bridges and everything, I'd like it if you'd also help educate me, where can that million come from? Because obviously with farm to market and different roads like that, we're pretty locked in. Clearly we've got some local roads. But I want to start to understand what we need to be doing to be getting the dollars we need to have to maintain our roads. So
let's move on to the bridges side of things. It's a little bit harder to give you the big picture money-wise with bridges because they're all different sizes, lengths. So basically, I'll give you the ages. I've shown this slide before. 60 years and older, we have a lot of bridges in that category. I think there's 90 bridges here. They're 60 years and older. A lot of wood bridges were built in this time frame here. A lot of these were concrete and steel. The wood bridges don't last as long, so it's pretty much this whole group is coming due at the same time for replacement, unfortunately. But that just kind of gives you overall picture, and what we've done in the past 30 years isn't keeping up. Again, the same type of sheet for structures. If you notice on the left, everything on this first sheet is in the program, and it shows what year it's under. I give you the cost. I didn't do accident counts for bridges because it's really site-specific. Let's start in. First, let me point out quickly, I did take a couple projects out of the program. I always like to let you know what those projects are when we take something out. This is one of them. This is actually on, I don't have a map right there, but this is on, it's kind of the extension of the Kelly pavement by Highway 69. It's Palestine. It's a box culvert that's still in decent shape. It just had some issues. We've already fixed these this spring. We put a bunch of riprap in here, and it had a tile issue that was eroding a lot in there, and we fixed those issues. So I think we can get some more life out of this. The slopes are really steep, but I think we're going to have to live with it since we can get some more life out of it. So this has been in the program for a long time. So needed to come out. Same with this one. Same type of deal. It's an intersection north of Collins. The high head walls, we have these all over the place, but these are a little bit wider than a lot of them are. A lot of them are really narrow, so it's not quite the safety concern, and the structures themselves are in decent shape. So we have enough out there that we have the head walls and the structures in bad shape. We need to take priority over this, so I did pull this one out, but may get back in at some point. But so those are the only two that got pulled out. My next step was to look at kind of a systems approach to doing bridge repairs. So I looked at our farm-to-market routes. We got to have at least a farm-to-market system that's reliable, and trying to get the load posting off of those that route system. The purple dots are all the load-posted bridges on farm-to-market routes only. The ones that have the yellow dot inside are the ones that have actually got into the program in the draft program here. One of them's under construction right now. It's that one on E18. We're putting the box culvert in right there. Next one is Onion Creek, just north of Ames on North Dakota. It's this bridge right here. Ames has been talking about developing this area, but even if that does develop, they were only going to annex up short of that bridge. So this is the picture of that bridge. It's got steel beams that are rusting pretty bad, and that's causing the load posting. And being a paved route, we're having a difficult time even getting our sand trucks over this with the load restrictions at this point. So it's come time we need to add that to our program, and we can use some federal funds to do this one.
Darren, what portion of North Dakota on the paving side of things, the actual road, are we talking about paving, and does it, it's further north?
That is just straight away, and some of this, we want to fix a little bit of this curve. It's so abrupt.
Right.
So we're
going to
fix that curve. We have some culvert issues around the corner, so our project starts about right here at the culverts and heads north.
Up to Cameron School.
Yeah. Okay. Another project already under design is north of Maxwell. It's over Indian Creek here. It's a pretty good-sized bridge. This curve is pretty abrupt, so we may have to redo some realignment, but that is currently under design using federal aid bridge funds again. Picture of that bridge. This is the good abutment. The other abutment is actually, the wing has actually fallen off. Starting to rust. Let's see how, I don't think I have an age on that one, but that's another 100-year-old bridge. This is a new addition. Paul, you didn't know this was on here, but you might recognize this one. It's on 667th. This is one of the few wood culverts we have. This has got a lot of fill on the top of it, but it's all made out of wood. We struggled with a number of years with erosion coming underneath these back walls, and we've tried to put some silt boards in here to get it to silt in. It keeps undercutting them. And now the piling are starting to go rot to the point we need to get this put on, and it's also on a curve. So we have some safety concerns there. It's not all that big of a structure, so we got that one added to the project program. We are down to number 10 on our list, 295th Indian Creek. It's a picture of that bridge. Unfortunately, this is a local road only, so we can use federal aid money, but we have to match it with local dollars and come up with local dollars up front. But we'll discuss that process later in the budget theory. But this is the problem. We have a unique bridge. It sits on these very small ledges, the four corners, and every time our bridge inspectors go out there, they say, get this bridge on the program. This little ledge goes here. The whole bridge is coming down. There's no redundancy in that bridge at all. So it's a safety concern. We don't have the age on that one, but that's another 100-year-old bridge.
Well, at what point do you determine that you need to close that? I mean,
this one's a difficult one. We load post mostly wood bridges because you can do a calculation because this board's gone. You know what the capacity is. But when it's concrete, it's very difficult to put a load on that because when it goes, it goes. There's no middle ground there.
What factors would speed this up? A heavy extended rain over a period of time, even though part of that area is protected?
It's just age.
Just age?
Or to the point where we're starting to lose the deck, too. The concrete's starting to fail and the steel's rusting, so these bridges weren't designed to last 100 years. So it's just time.
The concern I have is more of a future liability concern than anything. When you look at one like this, it's almost inevitable that something is going to happen. The question is the timing and when it might happen. And so at what point do you try to be preventive by either closing that and redirecting traffic to different areas? I know you've got limitations, load limits, so you're going to always have a few people that's going to take advantage. But I do think we have to do everything in our power to make sure that the public using those roads is aware of the potential unsafe conditions that could exist if they continue to go across that. Now, at what point do you have to say, well, we've notified you, but I think the only other option right now is to close this area off until we can get the funds to repair it.
This one has, you know, it's not even load post, so it's not to the point of closing it yet, but it's just a bit of a unique structure in the way that it was built, and it's just time for replacement. If we felt it was unsafe, we would close it immediately. So it's still safe, but we do need to do something with it because it's not going to be one of those we're going to load post all of a sudden. It's going to be immediate closure because there's no middle ground on this one.
I'm glad you're an engineer because the pictures, to me, that's scary. You know,
exactly, yeah.
And if I was the general public, you know, looking at that, and trying to justify whether it's safe or not safe, we would have a different viewpoint. And so I rely a great deal on you all's expertise in that particular area, but therein lies part of the crisis or the issue that I think we face with bridges that are deteriorating considerably and not having the funding to basically deal with that. And then when you look at that and you compare it with another one, you start saying, well, maybe we better spend the money on this one now. But I mean, it's just not.
That's where it gets to the point. We use our judgment, and that's what I've put in this program. And the second sheet is the ones that aren't in the program that I think are going to be issues like this, but I don't know how we're going to fund them, so we got to discuss how we're going to move down the road with those. If we're going to let some lower traffic roads go bridge-wise, or if we're going to fund them some other way, because they're not fundable at this point. Another one, this is on 300th Street, Palestine 13. This one's over 100 years old. A portion of it's completely gone over here that they've patched up with wood, but it's got the high, those are safety concerns with the high walls that traffic can hit on the top. So, that, again, this one is just time. Another new one, this is on the other stretch that NTRANS identifies a high accident road. This comes out of Story City. This is this stretch of gravel road right here. But that culvert is right in this location here. You can see people keep hitting these high walls, but I think I put an age on this one. This one's 98 years old, culvert, and it's hard to tell, but this concrete's all gone. It's just steel sticking out of there at this point. So time for it to go, safety-wise, too, with the road we're looking at. This one's just north of Fernald. It's right here on the gravel portion, right there. But this has the same issues that E18 bridge we're replacing right now. It has those precast channel sections that the concrete's finally popped off, showing that the steel is almost completely gone. This is an older picture, this guardrail. We've actually moved it in, narrowed the road up on both sides to keep the bridge open. So it's still safe, but these sections are going at a less of a rate, but we've added that to the program. Now I've moved to the second sheet, which is on the back of yours. These projects are not in the program, but these are the ones I anticipate to be coming up in the fairly short term on possible closures, or something's going to have to be done with them. This one, first one is here at Hickory Grove Park. It's just off the pavement right here on the gravel. I think I show that stretch gets 80 vehicles a day right here. But it's a local road only, long bridge. It's 133 feet now, so a new bridge would be at least 150 foot. The piling are getting so bad on the piers. It's been posted 10 tons for many years, but this one that's difficult to fund being local. It's not federal aid eligible even, so if we're looking at spending some TIF money, this one would probably be first on my list to add. This next one, this one's going to happen regardless. I just haven't decided if it's going to be a repair project yet or a replacement. This is on that same 190th pavement out by the winery north of Ames. We might be able to salvage the old portion and just put a new deck. The steel is so bad, especially on the outer beams where the salt runs off. Being paved, we salt them, and that's actually a hole all the way through the steel beam. It's rusted so bad. But we may be able to just replace the deck, but when we figure out how much that's going to cost, it's either going to be a replacement or a repair. Next bridge is number 19 on your list. It's by what we call the hole in the wall. I'll show you why we call it that in the next slide here. This one's been posted 5 tons, which is the minimum we post a bridge. Once it gets below that, it's closed. They've cobbled this thing with over time to keep it open. You can't see, but the back wall's really bowed, pushing out. This is the pier. Low traffic roads, you can tell by those are our garbage dump sites. These piling are about gone in the middle of the pier. This is why we call it the hole in the wall. But the bridge is right here, but this is right next to it. This is the Heart of Iowa Bike Trail. don't know how much farm equipment can actually fit through this anyway, so I don't know how much it's used for farm equipment. So that's why this might be a pretty good candidate for a closure. This kind of shows you the area I'm talking about. Cambridge, the green dots, the bike trail, culvert, and the bridge is just north of it. The problem, this is another bridge on my list right here. That's further down. That's the Skunk River Bridge. So if we close two of them so close, it's really closing this area off. But this is going to be a very costly bridge. They actually looked at closing this bridge about 20 years ago. Dell Jesperson sent letters out to landowners asking their opinion on closing it. And of course, the letters come back say, no, don't close it. So they just kept it open. But we did replace the Skunk River Bridge just north about 10 years ago, hopefully taking the pressure off of this one. But that's the challenge. Do we look at closing both or just one? I don't know. This bridge here is... Actually, I'll get to that. Oops.
Well, now, the one we're talking about right now, not the one near hole in the wall.
Yeah.
It's limited anyway, isn't it, because of that? I mean, you're limited what you can fit through there, so it's limited on what can go across that bridge.
Yep. And it's 5 tons. We can't even get over with a motor grader, so snow and ice removal is tough. Have to turn around. So that's probably the higher candidate, but this has been on the list for a long time of a possible closure, too. So probably a little comfortable doing both, closing both, but... That means this was a $1 million bridge right here.
Right.
Picture that one right here. That's.
But I think just looking at the hole in the wall, this bridge is the more vital bridge, isn't it?
I
understand it's $1 million to replace it, but this one.
This is 110 vehicles a day, so yeah, definitely. Another one high on the list for possible closure, we call this the Isaac Walton Bridge. This is right off of S-14. It's right in this area, it's this loop. But traffic coming across here, this is a far and a marker out, can go north. So what it would really be doing is making this segment here a dead end. There's a county park on the corner, on the curve, and then Isaac Walton is just about where this bridge is. We had this design... about 8 years ago by a consultant, and everything in that area is so low, including the bridge, hydraulic-wise, it would take like a 400-foot bridge. That's the only thing that we could get approved here. So the bridge would be terribly expensive for the road we're talking about. That has a traffic count. Isaac Walton's number 20. It does get 50 vehicles a day, but... I don't think it's all that necessary, 50 vehicles there. They could make a choice real easily and go the opposite direction. But that'd be something we'd have to probably talk to Isaac Walton about, because I think they have property on both sides of that bridge. This one's been posted 8 tons for a long time, and it's just high on the list for possible closure, something we need to consider. Already addressed this one. This is the Skunk River Bridge south of Cambridge. It has a twin. It's not the same bridge. That's north. This is the road Ames used to get back to their water treatment plant. This is also over the Skunk River. Same size bridge, so another $1 million bridge. Again, it's load posted, but we could probably buy some more time out of both of those bridges. But the one in Cambridge in particular is terribly rough to drive over if you've ever been over it. They tried to put an asphalt overlay on it once, and you can't do that on boards because they'll get cracks, and now it's just like a washboard across the thing. But those are two major bridges that are high on our list. This is one of the other Skunk River bridges that is coming up due. This is way up north, south of Story City on the 150th. This is number 26, the last bridge on your list. It's not eligible for federal aid right now. It's posted 19 tons. A lot of recent accidents hitting this bridge. But we might get another 5 or 10 years out of it, but then we're looking at probably closure. This is one of our worst wood bridges. This is up on the Hamilton County line, and it's a fairly long bridge. This is number 22 on your list there, 4, 5, and 20. 20 vehicles a day, so it is not federal aid eligible. Anything under 25 will never be federal aid eligible, so we cannot spend federal aid money on it. There is some houses nearby on each side of the bridge. I need to start talking to Hamilton County about it because they're responsible for half the cost of replacement. I haven't done that yet, so I will let you know what their thoughts are on it, but another one high on our list for possible closure. That's the pilot. This is one of the piers. The piling are getting real bad, and you see the pier caps are rotten. Last bridge I want to talk about. This one is not in the program. We just replaced this one, but I put the slide in for the one in the background. That's our historic bridge down by Maxwell. Currently not in the program because we think we took a lot of pressure off that bridge by replacing. There's two bridges that were bad right next to each other in the corner, so this one's got a brand new bridge. So in my opinion, that we're just going to let that one sit there. Historic bridge, we can't remove it anyway, but it's not scheduled for replacement.
Is it load posted right now?
No, it's another one of those concrete type issues. It's very difficult to load post a concrete bridge because there's no calculations that go.
Well, Darren, in the interest
we'll be able to tell
of,
when it's ready to fall down.
Supervisor Sanders will be leaving shortly. Are you able to kind of go back and cover a few of the concerns that he raised? And then I'm wondering if we don't need to extend this conversation to next week's agenda as well, because I don't think we're going to really be able to cover everything fully that we want. And we want to also hear from residents of Gilbert and so forth. So I think there's a lot of factors that we're going to need to deal with, and I think it's important the citizens in that area need to understand, you know, the situation that we're faced with and whether or not it's feasible that we could put a timetable or even considering some of the pavement of this area. See, so I think there are a lot of factors here, and I just believe that we need to take the time to fully vet this and come up with a plan one way or the other.
Well, I think that's the reason you're the chairman, is because that's a great suggestion, and I would suggest that we just put my questions and the conversation I want to have on hold. Hopefully we can have Darren come back soon and start to have that conversation, but it's not a 10-minute conversation.
No.
And Gilbert's here. I would love to give them the opportunity to weigh in while I'm still here. So, okay.
Just real quickly, I just want to address the one sheet I passed out. That kind of gives the big picture funding-wise. That's this sheet here.
Right.
That shows each of our funds, Farm Market Fund, STP Fund, or BRS Federal Bridge Fund. And on the right, the balance is over time.
Right.
So
right.
That kind of gives you the big picture of what we have to spend in the future. And we can discuss our other funding options next week.
Okay.
Is that okay if you come back next week? That work for
yes,
you?
I was
going to
plan on that anyway.
Okay. Well, at this point, I'm going to yield to John, Linda, and anyone else. If you'd like to make a few comments, please come up and take the seat here, please. And hopefully you'll be able to come at another time, too, as well, because I think this is a topic that we need.
Mayor, I hope you get the sense it's a fairly complex issue that we're dealing with.
Aren't they all, Rick? Well, my name's John Popp, and I'm the mayor of Gilbert, and I just wanted to put in our 2 cents for the Grant Street road from a safety standpoint. Lots of issues going on there. It's been highlighted in our area because of the high school construction and the amount of traffic that comes from the south, whether it's Squaw Valley or Bloomington Heights. We'd also like to be sure that the bike path money kind of gets incorporated in that so we can continue that safe routes to school issue. The other thing that's going to complicate that is the Highway 69 reconstruction. And I did talk to Darren about the ability of trying to keep that graded on a regular basis because I think the Manassas plan on the end of May closing that. So that will become a great time to do traffic counts if you guys are looking for high traffic counts, because we'll get all the construction traffic as well as the end of the school year down through there. So with that, it's mainly a safety issue from our standpoint. Not only the school but and the kids, we talked about the number of accidents there. Appreciate your comments about it being a speedway, but there's some give and take there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Linda's going to talk a little bit about the fire district involvement there,
great,
too. So thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Appreciate you. Linda?
Good morning. My name is Linda Merkin, and I chair the Board of Directors for the Gilbert and Franklin Township Fire and Emergency Response Agency. I am also a rural Gilbert resident, and I have lived in the area all my life. So I know very well what you're speaking about when you talk about the school district actually extending into the city limits of Ames. Our fire district also extends to the city limits of Ames and covers, you know, a lot more territory than I think most people realize. I think there's a lot of people who think that their fire and rescue services and protection come from the city of Ames, who really are covered by Gilbert. And we're seeing a high volume, mostly, you know, about two-thirds of them are probably emergency rescue and a third fire calls in a given year. Last year we had more fire calls last fall because of all the crop fires. But we are a very, very busy fire district, and a lot of what we do goes south from Gilbert and some to the east. So we are also very concerned. Gretton needs to be used on occasion. It's certainly not the widest road. I'm concerned that when, you know, the high school is going to be there, I know there's going to be lots more traffic on that road than the counts that are right now. And our firefighters and our board are very in support of paving Gretton or 530th to Moose Road. I do not envy you with the difficult challenges you have with that budget. You know, you've got, you know, and looking at those bridges in particular. But I hope that you are able to get 530th into the plan, because that area continues to grow. Gilbert and Ames continue to grow toward each other, and there's undoubtedly going to be lots more traffic on that road, and it is going to be more of a problem. So whatever you can do in the future to get that road into the plan, we would appreciate very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anyone
else? I see we had a couple other residents from, is it school board or just interested citizen? Oh, so no wonder you look like you know what you're doing.
I'm Greg Fisher. I'm the Gilbert High School principal.
Great. Welcome.
I thank you for allowing us to be here and be present. It's a wonderful opportunity to demonstrate to our young people at the high school that the power of the public is important in this process. I do understand you do have some tight budgets like we do trying to construct our new building. So I understand where you're at. It's interesting. Today I went around and was talking to some of our classes about this issue and about what we're going to do to try and present, to look at trying to get us just even placed on the five-year plan. I was in a class of 18 kids. Of that 18 kids, three of them had accidents on that roadway. That's one-sixth of the population in that classroom has had accidents on there. I know it doesn't seem like much. I think we've been very, very fortunate. We've had concussions, broken arms, broken wrists, nothing major. I always think we're playing a little rush from that with that roadway. I agree that it is a dragway, and unfortunately, the sheriff's department for the county has been very diligent here of late and sitting on that road a lot. And I really appreciate what they've done. I also appreciate that stop sign component being in there. I'd be honest with you, I'd think there could have been a four-way stop there, and I'd have been happy with that instead of having a three-way in one direction. Because again, I think it makes people slow down, stop, and really look things through before they proceed. So I think anything you can do to allow our youth to go back and forth, because it's going to happen. We're at a school system of 393 kids now, projected to be over 500 in a very short period of time. And kids are going to go down that roadway. So I just think like you to think about, you know, making sure that in the future that is a possibility. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Mm-hmm. Okay.
My name is Lindsay Beecher. I'm the superintendent at Gilbert. A lot of the same reasons that you've heard from the other patrons, I would echo. I know that you have a difficult task. Budgets are always very, very difficult, whether you're dealing with county or schools or what have you. But we are looking at our building project being completed in the summer of 2013. and that road will definitely pick up as far as traffic. And safety is a high priority, and anything that you can do to take a look at that. I know that you have a lot of difficult decisions, listened to some of those this morning, and a lot of things that you have to prioritize. But if there's any way that you can take a look at that and try to do what you can for that paving, we would sure appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Darren, as we move to the future and ponder alternatives and options, normally, and I don't know if I'm using the word normally correct, but when you have a construction of a school or expansion of a city, boundaries through annexation, etc., and new development goes in, if you're talking subdivisions and things like that, you've got some control of the cost of that being shared by the developers. In case of existing homes and areas of this nature, are there provisions or options? I know they mentioned the word bike path extensions, and we're talking about this in the Nevada area there, where the homeowners in that area were involved in fundraising and so forth to contribute somewhat toward that. But as we explore the future, what are the kinds of options that are out there under the existing structure that we're dealing with now, other than deciding to move a project like this ahead of some other projects?
Funding options?
Yes.
We've had the discussion about the TIF funds, which is a new thing that's come up with the wind farm. Other than that, there's a provision in the code for an assessment district that comes as a petition, but that's from the adjacent landowners, and they have to pay for at least 50% of the project. But seems like the pressure's coming more from it's a unique situation. We've got two cities sharing a school district to the south. Not a lot of other funding options.
Well, I obviously believe we've got to have a way to have a topic of discussion, particularly to all the residents that are affected by this and will be affected by the traveling to and from their current locations to the new school, and whether or not there is a way that we could get some assistance through that. I certainly concur with Superintendent and Principal when they talked about this grant through the Bike Safe Route to Schools grants. We certainly don't want to lose those funds, so I think we need to try to position ourselves to stay in a position that there is a good reality that can be recognized. So, again, part of the problem, and I know once you start a payment, it's so costly to come back and then only do it in small segments of a quarter at a time. So we're talking really, what, about a mile, mile and a half here?
Mile and a half north about a mile of 190th, yeah.
Yeah. So as you have kind of put a projected cost like you gave us initially here. So I guess I'm at a quandary in terms of how we continue to begin to move forward this discussion, because I believe this is a priority area. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the reasons, maybe it goes back to, we're talking about our youth and our kids. The adults ought to be smart enough to drive reasonably, but we know that doesn't happen. But young people are not necessarily going to make the right choices under any circumstances. So I do agree that this is a safety issue. It's a concern that I've had for many years, and I think this is a priority that we as a county, in collaboration with the city and Ames and Gilbert, need to see if there's a way that we could address this need.
I think I'd just ask, do we have any other gravel roads in the county leading directly to a school? I mean, and I'm not, that's a rhetorical question, Darren. I'm not asking for an answer right now. But as I look at this, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that the roadways to our schools are some of our most important roads. However they're designated or anything else, I mean, that's carrying our most important resource on a daily basis. And so I'm going to want to look at that. I'm going to want to look at every funding possibility that we can, and try to make a decision fairly quickly, since we know that this school is going to be completed in the summer, you know, a year and 3 months from now.
Yeah, and paving won't happen overnight if we're able to fund it. But we got to go through the right-of-way process
and get it done right.
It'll take a year or two to get it paved.
So.
Good. Well, Rick, why don't you get going to your
meeting? I want to stay. I don't know how long this next one is, but I want to stay for it if I can. If you don't think it's going to be long. Okay.
Okay.
Real quick,
right.
I'm going to leave the map in the boardroom. I'm going to get everything I presented on our website today. Any comments can be brought back next week. I'll be here next week.
Great. And let's keep the folks from Gilbert in tune with the meetings and the discussions and the topics. And if we need to schedule a secondary meeting at an evening time or another time that's more appropriate, let's do that.
Okay.
Because I think communication is very important as how we move forward in this area.
On the funding topic, there is a rally at the State House tomorrow to get the fuel tax increase. That's one of our major options to fix these problems. I cannot make it. I already committed to teaching a class at Iowa State County Engineering. So if any of the board can make it, that'd be great.
Thank you. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Nice job.
Okay. Hey, moving on, and I believe consideration of is that item two here? Yeah.
Yep.
Consideration of contract with City Administrator and Management Professional Services, FEMA HMGP application grant.
And I'll
thank
just
you,
jump
Melissa
in before
Kevin.
Melissa goes. This is driven actually from our power outage a week or so ago, and looking at what our generator was capable of doing, not only in this building but in other county buildings. It was an opportunity to see the shortcomings of what we have right now, and in a major emergency, what ability we'd have here at the county to run an emergency operations center. So with that.
I think
Thank
Rick
you.
Just took care about half of my presentation right there with that statement. As Rick mentioned, this does stem from our power outage back at the beginning of the month. We did realize that the generator that was powering emergency management offices, IT, and the emergency lighting in the building along with facilities management was already functioning at 75% capacity on the generator. In discussions with facilities, that only leaves about 5 to 10% operational capacity if we would want to add anything onto the generator. There was two main issues that were brought forth. One was that if we had an emergency where we had to activate our emergency operations center, there are other portions of this building that would need to be utilized to sustain our disaster operations. Currently, those are not powered by the generator. Another important issue that came up was that county services during that 90 minutes came to a halt. If we would have a significant power outage, like due to an ice storm, there would be no revenue coming into the county during that time because those offices are not powered by the generator. And quite frankly, the public has come to expect that county services will continue even in the event of a disaster or prolonged power outage. FEMA has a program currently that allows counties to purchase generators to sustain essential operations at a 15% cost match to the county. In talking with Al Hahn, he was able to provide a very rough estimate of about $250,000 for a generator to power the entire building and everything that would needed to be to run the building. And so with that, the approximate cost match to the county would be about $37,500. And again, these are very, very rough estimates from them. Homeland Security, who disseminates the grant here in the state of Iowa, advised there are still funds available. However, they are going very, very quickly. It really wasn't until we had the 90-minute outage that we really realized that we do have an issue in the administration building. So the recommendation from the state was that if the county wants to move forward with this, they're going to need to move very, very quickly. As I mentioned before, the funds are dwindling. There are consultants available that can help the county through the application process and through the notice of intent. Where our office has become very familiar with Kevin, who I have with me here today, Kevin Stocker with City Administration and Management Professional Services. He worked with the cities of Collins, Ancolo, and Story City on this same program to acquire a generator. Colo and Story City both advised me they were very pleased with his quality of work and the reasonable cost. Due to the accelerated process, I did ask Mr. Stocker to provide us contract for the board to review, and I also have him here to answer any questions about the contract or the process for the grants. Today, I would encourage the board to take into consideration securing services with a consultant to complete the grant process and also to commit providing the 15% match that would be required of the grant.
Quick question before you go, and you said you, in consulting with Al, the projected possible costs, were these dollars that he thought that would be carryover dollars or dollars within his budget that we would have, or are we looking at using dollars from the ending fund balance basically to be able to cover this $37,500?
He didn't advise me how he would look at covering it. He did have some concerns in our conversations that currently he does not wouldn't have the $37,500 to cover it. However, there is a possibility that the generator that's currently in place, because we would be actually replacing the generator that's there, that there maybe could be some resale value from it. However, he could not advise of what that cost was.
Okay. Well, I think that would be a next important step for us to be able to put that information together as we move forward. And then my other question would be is if we enter into the contractual agreement with the Kevin and so forth there, is there an upfront cost to that as we are going through the application process? Oops, it's still on. It doesn't work.
Okay.
It's still on.
Mm-hmm. Pull it a little closer.
On my contract?
Yeah.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me here today. As Melissa said, the process is fairly, I don't want to say it's simple because then that demeans the costs of the contract, but as quickly as what she's talking about moving forward with this, I'm prepared today to submit the first step, which is the notice of intent for both generators. That's the first step. Iowa Homeland Security takes that into account and then begins the application process. Like she said, I've done this for three other cities in the county. I believe I have the time and the commitment availability to get these submitted within a week to 10 days. That will take a lot of hours to do so in that time frame. The other ones took about a month to put together, but we had time. That was back in November. We were the first ones in Collins, for example, in the entire program. At this point in time, when you get onto the back end of the grant process, the funds become very competitive because everybody realizes there's not much left. There's a lot of work to be done. I agree with Melissa today that you would help aid in the process if you committed to the 15% match, because there is paperwork that would have to be signed for the grant to be submitted, that the 15% match has already been discussed at a board meeting, and also that you would name a point of contact to sign paperwork rather than any of you or the chair there would be available, because it would make it easier for myself and or Homeland Security and FEMA to work directly with your staff that's already available every day.
Do you have to have that information to file the notice of intent?
We are supposed to put down a point of contact on there with the...
And I'm sorry, I'm talking about the commitment. So what I'm trying to get to is we could proceed with filing the notice of intent now and come back at a later date and figure out exactly where this $37,500 is.
That's what I would be comfortable with.
And I would also go out and get those quotes and get a more exact number. That's right. $50,000. It's probably fairly close from what I've seen in generator prices. However, we would need something more exact to submit the actual application. Then we would know the 50% match.
Right.
Is there a possibility that we could, I mean, this generator we've got now certainly got value. I mean, it's not a boat anchor sitting down there in the parking lot by any means. And whether it's resale value to come up with a match money or if it's trade value on a new one, I mean, it's got to have some. And I would be interested to know what the value of that generator
is. I did try to ask Al if Al was not going to be available today to speak on the current state of the generator and what any kind of turnaround value would be on the generator we have now. So,
yeah. And I mean, while we're mentioning this particular building, there has been ongoing discussion with Al regarding other buildings, Community Life, for example, and City of Ames and so forth. And I don't know whether there's any ability a generator like this could be used over there in the short term. I mean, those are factors that we've got to consider, but I do think that's another cost that we're going to hear more about within this next funding year. But anyway, thank you. I would certainly be comfortable initially saying that I think we as a county need to really critically take a look at this, do everything that we possibly can to position ourselves to be in position to go down this path, but I think there is the need for that additional information and more of a narrowing down what the cost is, and if we could get that information and then defer any formal action until a later date, I would be pleased to move forward with that.
Kevin, we pay you if we receive the grant?
If you receive the grant. That's a confidence level that I have that I'll write the grant, go through the process. I do understand from Melissa that administration is needed as part of the grant and helping see the process all the way through the end of the project, so that's included in that 3.5% of the received grant.
Traditionally, the chair would sign that notice in the event that I am not available. A vice chair would be authorized to do that, but we would certainly try to be as expedient as we possibly could.
I'd make a motion that we enter into a contract with City Administration and Management Professional Services to administer this grant application for us as listed in the professional service agreement that's before us, and I'd like to designate our chairman as the point of contact and signator on anything that we would need to do.
Second thing.
Been moved in second to enter into consideration of a contract with City Administrator and Professional Service regarding the grant application process. Any further comments? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, and we're glad to work with you. Good luck. Don't speed.
We're past that point.
Okay. Okay. Moving on to the third item under additional items is consideration of request to consider amending the Ames Urban Friends Plan for property located west of G.W. Carver, northwest of Ames. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I feel like a broken record. This is why... very similar situation as to why your planning development staff was before you last week. This is a request that's being brought forth by Chuck Winkleblack with Hunziker Realty. Again, is to consider that you consider amending the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. We're looking at the process as defined in Attachment C of the 28E agreement signed by the entities of Storey County, City of Ames, and City of Gilbert. Just some very basics. I did share with the board the staff report that the City of Ames wrote when this was considered at their council on March 6th. At that meeting, the Ames City Council did agree to consider the request to amend the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. It's currently designated as in the rural urban transitional area. The request is property that lies to the west of the George Washington Carver Avenue, to the northwest of Ames. To be honest, the land will not likely be developed if it is in Storey County. It will likely be annexed, and that is what's driving the amendment to Ames Urban Fringe Plan to an urban services area. Again, you're not acting on amending the plan. The request is simply to consider amending the plan. Just one last thing. Again, according to the 28E agreement, Attachment C, it does take two of the three entities, parties to agreement, to consider amending the plan, and Ames has already taken action. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
No, this is basically the follow-up or the second step in the process, as we heard last week, basically. And so I have no questions. Anything, Paul?
No, I would move that we... approve consideration to
and the band. Okay, and I will second that. Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion to consider amending the Ames Urban Friends Plan for this particular project, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And we'll continue to work with you, Leanne, in the future as we move forward with this. Okay, item four, moving down, is the Ames Urban Fringe Agreement, GW Carver PDF, consideration of appointing a review committee to review Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority response and develop a recommendation. I believe there was a letter that you submitted, Leanne, to us regarding this, and you'll probably mention the names of the individuals. Thank you.
And the next item will let you know those firms that did respond to our RFP for the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, but so that we have a process to find in order to review the proposals received. Staff is coming forward with two items. One is a potential list of potential names to serve in that capacity, and then also the scoring sheet that I did put a copy on before the meeting. As you referenced, Wayne, there is a memo that I developed last week, and I recommend three names. And I've contacted each of these, and they've all agreed to serve on the review committee. Margaret James with the Story County Environmental Health, Melissa Spencer with Story County Emergency Management, and Steve Osgathorpe with the City of Ames Planning and Housing. I will be in at the meeting only to facilitate the discussions. I've met prior to receiving the proposals with various firms. I think it's probably better that I just simply facilitate and do the tabulation, then I'll be forward again with you with their recommendation. The schedule today is, if you do agree to appoint the committee, we'll distribute the responses we received. And Wednesday afternoon, tomorrow, we've scheduled a review committee meeting, if again appointed today. And then Thursday, if the committee is ready to forward a recommendation onto the Board of Supervisors, I'll work with Shelley to get that on your next Tuesday's agenda. If they don't feel they're ready and they need to meet face-to-face with the individual vendors, I'll be back here with you next week asking an extension for a week so that we can have a couple days to meet that and meet the deadlines of the board meeting. With that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
No, but I think your letter pretty well spells out what we're doing today.
I would move approval of the names on that were submitted for the review committee for the RFP for the Squaw Creek Watershed Management.
Okay. And I will second that motion. This is the consideration of appointing the review committee. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Moving down to our next item is the RFP steering committee appointment.
That was from the previous one.
That was just the second part of that. Okay, we took care of that. Update on the. Excuse me. I think the actual appointment.
It's the receipt. The receipt of the responses to the RFP.
Okay, and so, is that the?
I have them here.
Okay. So it's just acknowledging the receipt of them. Okay.
This should be rather straightforward. We did send out both written notices to several engineering and planning firms in central Iowa, as well as one in Minnesota. And then we did place an ad in the three official newspapers of Story County. With that, we received four very solid responses. The first one is from MSA, Professional Services in Ankeny, Iowa. These are in no particular order, too. I'm just naming all four. The second one we have is Bolton and Menk Incorporated from Ames, Iowa. The third is Snyder and Associates out of Ankeny, Iowa. And the last is from Prairie Rivers of Iowa, RC&D from Ames, Iowa. So these are the four proposals that the board will be receiving today, and then the steering committee will be acting to review them beginning tomorrow.
Okay. Any questions?
Your simple action is just to acknowledge the receipt.
Okay.
We need a motion to acknowledge the receipt. I'll make a motion that we acknowledge the receipt of the responses to the RFP to the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority.
And I will second the motion to acknowledge the receipt of the Squaw Creek Watershed Managing Authority, the responses. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. All right, moving on. Update on item six, update on the Ames Flood Task Force.
I want to just start by thanking Shelley for making sure all my items are together so I can just sit here. I appreciate that. I did also put a very simple memo together for the board meeting, and I'm going to ask that you look at the back of it. There's just a one-page snapshot. Without delving too much into it, the Ames flooding study was really a result of the 2010 flooding in Ames and Story County. You as the board appointed me, and Ames appointed individuals, and Iowa State appointed individuals to work as a staff grouping to look at what can be done on three areas, flooding and engineering analysis, a really in-depth review of the Squaw Creek and Skunk River watersheds, what's happened, looking at adopting regulatory steps or looking at future mitigation efforts to reduce future damage, and then educational presentation on potential future intense rainfalls. I think everyone, as much as we try to black out of our memory, remember very vividly the intense rainfall events that occurred in the various watersheds that led to the flooding events in 2010. What I want to call your attention to very specifically is the column that's listed in the table, a citizen sounding board. We've been calling in the past an advisory group, but I think we don't see them as operating in an advisory capacity. Simply what we see them as being a sounding board that we'd like the presentation that Iowa State has put together on that specific education presentation on future rainfall events to react to, and then tell us, yes, the public will be engaged in this discussion, or no, you've lost us from the very word you said hi, go back and reinvent this, and then if we need to meet again. Really kind of vetting that presentation before it goes public. Why I'm here today, Dave, is quite twofold. One, to tell you this is the process that we'd like to follow, and just make sure that you agree with that, and then let you know that we are on a very tight time frame. We'd like to get these public information meetings scheduled for mid-April and early May, and Story County will be hosting a couple, City of Ames will be hosting a couple, and Iowa State will be hosting a couple. The two that we'll host, it will be one specifically targeted to the emergency management personnel, those going in, the first responders. The other will be the general public in the various watersheds and unincorporated residents primarily being our target. But I just wanted to, it's been a while since you've seen, really heard about this, and things have been slowly evolving. We haven't been out there in the public and really meeting with you all. So put this together just to give a quick snapshot of where it is, what the next steps are, and then the next step is I will be recommending, with your assistance, a few names for the sounding board. All the entities are putting a couple names together and then really getting the meetings going. But if you have questions, I want to take the opportunity to update you.
So basically this group will not be bringing forth recommendations, but they just will be a group of bouncing ideas off, sharing input about how they may perceive the impact of some of the decisions that are being made.
I'll then go right to you, Wayne. Several years ago when we looked at the land use amendments and the county development plan, we had an advisory group that worked through each and every issue. This is so large and so all-encompassing in the three-tiered approach that the commitment, first of all, of the Citizens Advisory Group in that capacity would be enormous.
Right.
And
we
are quite cognizant of the limited ability people have to give the amount of time that's needed on a volunteer basis. And two, that we'll have individuals that have been primarily affected throughout this entire process involved. But we just want to make sure that we can have someone that tells us, yeah, you're putting the right information out there for people to react to, or say, you know, been there, done that, don't even ask those types of questions, focus in on this, and let people respond to that. Is that clear?
I think it's a good idea. You're asking for feedback and input from people that are affected the most by these events, so I would lend my support to it, definitely.
And by all means, when we do schedule meetings, we'll have you guys invited.
Well, actually, this doesn't require action the way it's listed, but I think the concept, I think we certainly do support, and we'll move forward in hearing more about it at a later time. Okay, and at some point, will it be necessary to approve those individuals who...
I think I'll probably be before you next week. I want to first personally ask them.
Sure.
I've talked to at least one of them, Steve Lekwa,
right.
See if he is when I talked to him last fall, he was interested. But I have a couple other names I'm throwing around, and I may even email you all, see if you have any suggestions. Or if you have suggestions,
let me
know.
I think you and I talked about this earlier anyway, didn't we? Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Then moving on then to item 7, I believe, would be consideration of grant application for the REACH program. We're going to move this to the 10th. We did receive a letter from the sheriff regarding the timing of this request, and they would not be able to have gotten all of the necessary information available to us for our consideration. And so they wish to go ahead and move forward, but the actual presentation would be presented on the 10th, knowing that it will be beyond the actual deadline for doing this. But this is one of those real timing issues, and since it's really a grant application and there's no real dollar commitment at this point in time, I think it would be appropriate for us to hear that presentation on the 10th. So, okay. So no action will be taken today. Okay. Then moving on down, agency reports. I believe we have emergency residence project. Welcome, Vic. Come on down. Okay, thank you. You can leave one. I can make a copy for Rick too. I'll be sure he gets it. Thank you.
I also looked at numbers because we're close to three quarters of the way through our current year, so I just did some projections for this year, which are maybe more relevant to what we're doing right now. And it looks like our shelter usage will be up somewhere around 4% this year, and our prevention program will be down about a similar amount. I've got in this annual report, the first paragraph, I think, is a fairly good summary of you know, where we're at. We did provide shelter to an average of 51 people a night last year and helped, I think it's 1,600-something individuals avoid losing their homes or their heat and their lights. That's pretty much, the main thing we do. The county is funding our emergency shelter part of this program. That's where your money goes. But by doing that, it really makes our other programs possible, too. So you really can take, I think, credit for part of what we do with these other things, too. And they're all tied together in dealing with emergency housing for individuals or preventing the need for that. And I guess I could go in some length about the nature of these problems and the causes and solutions and stuff like that. I think that would require a fair amount of time if you're ever interested in dedicating some time to looking at this broader issue. I did bring a sheet here of 20 solutions to this problem. There's no simple solution. I think those have been tried, but these are all issues, and I even got handouts to explain some of these solutions, so it would take some time to go through this, but I think we could always do more, but we are dealing with a nationwide economy and a global economy, and when I look back at what has happened, nothing in Story County sticks out from what's happening state and nationwide. We've just seeing this kind of a constriction of the middle class and more people that are working that can't afford some of their most basic needs, primarily housing. And anyway, I think anything we can do, even slight improvements, would certainly be nice. We continue to lose our affordable housing countywide and statewide. We've lost just in the last few years a handful of mobile home courts and some other older housing that's been demolished for the medical expansions and stuff like that. And none of this has been replaced with like housing of those price ranges. So that's kind of what has happened. There certainly aren't any easy solutions, but I do feel like we should never, you know, I can't rest on our laurels, even though I think we're doing quite a bit for what we have, but it's still not solving the problem. We're just putting out lots of fires and occasionally do make a lasting impact with some households, but we really really need to be doing more, I believe. Any questions?
On a comparison from previous years, are we seeing an increase with the economy as it exists, or is it we're just about holding our own in terms of the numbers of
the numbers are fairly. I'm sorry. The numbers are fairly flat, but those numbers reflect our capacity. They really don't reflect the need.
Right.
So you know, if we had more, we could do more. But, you know, the county and asset process has increased their funding every year. It's just that the need has grown faster than we have. And even though we've expanded from initially going back a couple decades to having a capacity of around 8 people a night, now we're housing 51 a night, we were more likely to have room back then than we were now. That's really how much the problem has grown over that time.
Wow.
Well, I just want to say we appreciate the service that you provide. It's an invaluable service, and I know all the years I've spent with the sheriff's office, if we'd come across an individual that was in transit from point A to point B in the middle of a rainstorm or the wintertime, we'd, you know, the first place you'd call would be the emergency shelter in Ames, and I don't know how you do it. You always seem to accommodate our requests, so we never really had to never send anybody down the road. In inclement weather, we were always able to bring them over to the shelter and find a place for them to stay. So it's an invaluable service that you guys provide over there, and we certainly appreciate it.
I appreciate that. And law enforcement has been our biggest single source of agency referrals over the years. Turns out that you're open 24/7, and we are, so it's a pretty good fit, I guess, because we don't look forward to those referrals, but that's really why we're there. So I'm glad we were able to house or accommodate most of those requests.
Thank you.
And as Paul said, thank you for your continual service and work in this area. Appreciate it very much. Okay, moving on. Okay. Moving on down the agenda, departmental reports, don't think we have any. Liaison assignments and committee updates, anything, Paul?
I don't have anything to report this
week. Just very briefly, I met yesterday with Deb Shulroff, our CPC. The gist of that conversation basically was just keeping us in the loop in terms of the state and a redesign, and the fact that CPCs within surrounding counties are getting together and talking about what the future may be in the mental health arena and the delivery of service, and we will probably be setting up a meeting to host several of those counties just to kind of see if everybody's on the same page and what kind of information may be necessary as we contemplate that the state may be leaving it up to counties to actually develop some form of regions for our shared service. And then the second part of our discussion centered around continual transportation needs for our citizens throughout Story County and how we will continue to work with Heartland Senior Service towards meeting these transportation needs. We'll be hearing more about this in upcoming weeks and months regarding the collaboration between the county, Heartland, and Herder as far as transportation is concerned. So that was the bulk of our conversation. Okay. Other reports? Consideration of claims. I would entertain a motion to approve the claims as submitted.
So moved.
Up. Whoa. I'll take a deep breath. Okay. Okay.
I would move approval of the claims list.
And I will second that. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the claims as submitted, the approval of the claims, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Okay. All right. Moving on down to item number 12, consideration of personnel action as listed.
I would move approval of the personnel actions.
And I will second it. It's been moved and seconded, the approval of the personnel action as submitted. And further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Pose. Motion carries on personnel. The next item is a consent agenda. It looks like we have all items for consideration on the consent agenda.
I would move approval of the consent agenda.
I will second it. It's been moved and seconded. Approval of the consent agenda. Roll call, Toot.
Aye.
Clinton, aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay, moving on to item 15, which was added to the agenda, which is a public forum number 2. This is where we'll have comments on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action at this time, but may do so in the future. Your chance. Okay. So, moving on, announcements from the supervisors.
Pass.
Well, I will pass as well.
Move for adjournment.
And I will second it.
How you doing, Shelly? Okay.
How you doing, Shelly? Well,
okay, we're good.
All right. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, opposed. Meeting is adjourned.
One with the new agenda.
All right. This is
oh,
yeah, but
not in this, not for us though.